The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, a really warm welcome. It's nice to practice together. While we were sitting, you know, sometimes we hear the rustle of somebody shifting their posture, and somehow it just made me happy. There's, you know, human bodies here, individuals here together, you know, practicing. It was so, thank you. So tonight I want to talk a little bit about something that seems so obvious. Like it seems like we shouldn't even have to talk about it. And yet there's a way that there can be a depth about it and there can be some real awakening or some new understanding when we really look at it, we kind of unpack it or explore it in some kind of way. And that is this idea that the actions we take, whether they are of body, speech, or mind, so whether they're thoughts, I'm putting thoughts in there with this category of actions. Actions have consequences. There's a cause and effect. And this is not anything new to anybody in this room. In fact, I think there's even like a physics law about this, right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? It's so fundamental that even the physicists have talked about it. And so we know this, that if we are dishonest with a friend and our friend discovers this, or even if they don't discover it, but it affects our relationships. If we spend a lot of time being angry at the news, then our minds get filled with angry thoughts, and we tend to just have a lot of tension and anger inside of us. And of course, there's this teaching that which one ponders becomes the inclination of the mind, right? So we're kind of like priming the mind to just be more readily angry if we're just fueling it all the time. So to be sure, some things have little impact on our lives. We experience, maybe there's not a big impact that we have to wait in line a little bit longer at the grocery store, for example. Some things have large impact. If we find ourselves behaving unethically, this could unfold in a way that has large impact. If we do a lot of meditation, that can be a way that also there's a big impact. So some of the consequences are small. It might even be dismissive, and some are large. But there is nothing that doesn't have any impact. And part of the Buddhist practice is to just thoroughly recognize this and to thoroughly understand this. That, of course, things have consequences. And this simple idea, which now is so commonplace for all of us, wasn't so obvious at the time of the Buddha. In fact, there's another teacher, a non-Buddhist, that gets described in a number of different places in the suttas, and a little excerpt of what this other teacher would say, Makali Gosala. He would say, there is no cause or condition for the corruption of beings. There is no cause or condition for the purification of beings. All beings, all living creatures, all sentient beings lack control, power, and energy. Instead, they are molded by destiny, by circumstance, by nature. So this idea that something out there was responsible for whatever happened to a person. So it didn't matter what a person did. There was something out there, and it wasn't ever for this particular teacher wasn't clearly described what that was. But this idea then that people, doesn't matter what we do. Doesn't matter. No consequences. We might say that the Buddha's teaching on the Four Noble Truths is the opposite. There are consequences. There's a number of different ways in which we can approach the Four Noble Truths. We can emphasize different parts, and we can translate some of the words a little bit differently. But one way to look at this is that there is dukkha, right? The First Noble Truth, there is dukkha. We can translate dukkha as just this dissatisfaction, like just things are not quite right. And maybe we can't even like necessarily put our finger on it. It just feels dissatisfying or just not perfect. All the way to dukkha being the suffering of tremendous physical pain that humans can experience. Tremendous emotional pain that humans can experience. So this dukkha from just the something not quite being right to great pain. First noble truth, there is dukkha. And then the second noble truth, there is a cause for dukkha. Dukkha is a consequence of something else. There's a reason that it's there. It doesn't mean that we know it. It doesn't mean that it's obvious to us. But it does mean that it's not like magic or, you know, somehow it's happening from some other reason that has nothing to do with humans. Or I guess it might be right. I mean, weather and these types of things that happen. But I'll unpack this a little bit more about what I mean by dukkha. So second noble truth, there is a cause. Third, there is a cessation of dukkha. And fourth, there is a way leading to the cessation. So practicing this path requires that we recognize that there are actions that bring us dukkha, and there's actions that bring us non-dukkha, you might say, freedom, peace, ease. And so much about this practice is just recognizing, okay, is this going towards dukkha or not? Is it going towards freedom? And we could interpret the Four Noble Truths this way. And without this understanding, of course, it's really difficult to have our lives unfold in a particular way. That everything has consequences, and we can consider whether those consequences are more dukkha or less dukkha. Maybe what I've been saying, it's like, okay, Diana, we know this. This isn't our first Dharma talk. We've heard about the Four Noble Truths. We've heard about dukkha. But something that I appreciate so much about the Dharma is how there's this depth and this breadth. When we really explore, we can find something that meets us wherever we are. We hear about teachings, we read suttas, we practice again and again. And then sometimes our understandings start to shift. The way it touches us starts to shift. And we start to, even though we might have seen it so many times, we might see it in a new way and understand something differently and that we didn't understand before. And I'd like to suggest that our understanding of dukkha shifts as we practice. Probably many of you have this experience. I know that I remember this so clearly, that a Dharma teacher, I was having a practice discussion, and a Dharma teacher said something to me about suffering. And I said, I don't have any suffering. You know, I had just quit my job at that time, and I was feeling, you know, pretty great. Like, wow, I had attributed, like, all my difficulties with, you know, having this job. But not realizing that this, as our meditation practice starts to grow and we start to experience more and more calm, as we start to experience more and more peace, then our definition of dukkha kind of shifts along with that. And we start to notice, oh yeah, there are more and more subtle experiences and expressions of dukkha. So we can start to become that. It starts to become that which is less calm, that which is less open, that which is less quiet. So dukkha can be understood as this tightening, as this constriction, which can be really subtle. And maybe shows up primarily in our meditation practice, or maybe it shows up in really obvious, gross ways in our daily life as well. But we can explore this world of actions and consequences by looking at dukkha. Because for some people, their suffering, their difficulties, their why things aren't going the way that they wish is a little bit of a mystery to them. Why isn't my life the way that I thought it was going to be? Or why is there this suffering? Why is there this sense of dissatisfaction? And often we look in the wrong places for the cause. It's a habit that many of us have. It's a human habit to blame. Somebody else did something wrong. This has to be fixed. Somebody better fix it. This is not right. We might blame ourselves. If only I were a better meditator, if only I were a better this, a better that, it would then this suffering wouldn't be here. Often people are looking outside themselves. Okay, I have to fix this up there. I have to engineer, manipulate, manufacture, you know, somehow create some different conditions in order to see for the dukkha. Or sometimes people just are complaining, not even having some clear idea of what is the source of dukkha. But we can bring attention, bring care to this dukkha without self-pity, without blame, but to look at it and to see the action that is underlying, that is fueling, that is the cause for this constriction, that is dukkha. Very often that action is attachment or clinging. And so much about practice can be loosening the constrictions, can be about loosening this, the tightening that happens around, that causes dukkha. So this clinging, this attachment can be really subtle. And when we find ourselves experiencing dukkha, we can just ask, okay, where is there any sense of tightness, any sense of holding on, any sense of clinging? It's likely that we will discover that this clinging, this tightness, this holding on, this contraction is related to having a sense of self. Self that we want to be a particular way, or we want to not be a particular way. And there's a particularly strong sense of self when there is blame. There's this often a sense of self-righteousness that arises, like, don't they know who I am? What are they thinking? Or when we make a mistake or something goes wrong, we most often are turning towards blame. And there's this exaggerated, inflexible sense of me or you. And a kind of he said, she said, I said kind of thing that happens. Often we're blaming ourselves or blaming others. And then these negative self-views or these negative views of others, they tend to like fuel themselves or fuel each other, creating this vicious dukkha cycle. So I would like to propose or suggest there's a way in which we can find our way out of this, that we can interrupt these dukkha cycles. And one way is to look at, reanalyze any experience in which we're having dukkha, and look at it again. Maybe it's on the cushion or outside of the cushion, as a way to understand what are the conditions that came together that are supported this experience of difficulty, this experience of dukkha. Is there a way that we can look at that from a different angle, with maybe a heart of compassion, and in the service of compassion, to recognize that there are so many different conditions that come together, so many, like countless conditions that come together, and whatever is happening, right? Something is the consequence of all kinds of different things. Us being here together is consequence of this building being built, and this things on the internet that's on the calendar, and however transportation you use to get here, right? It's countless things that come together. So to illustrate this, I'd like to share a story. This story is from Rob Berbea, and it gives an example of how one might do this. So imagine that you were with a friend, and your friend is telling you some difficulty she is going through. And you're listening as attentively or sympathetically as you can, but at the same time, you're also aware of some disquiet within yourself, and you're vaguely worried that maybe you should have a little more empathy, or you should have some more compassion for your friend. But they are telling you this story about her difficulty, and somehow you feel unmoved, not really touched by what this is saying. And later, when you reflect on this, it bothers you, and you wonder, is there something wrong with me? Why wasn't I able to connect with my friend? And maybe you have this idea, well, I've been doing all this practice, and am I just a cold-hearted person after all? How come I couldn't connect with this person that I care about? But that way of considering that particular activity or that particular experience is where you're focusing on yourself and holding only yourself responsible for how things went, fails to see, it fails to take into account a whole range of other factors that contributed to limiting the connection you felt with your friend. For example, it could be something really basic. Maybe you had a headache and you weren't quite feeling the best version of yourself, feeling a little bit off. Maybe you were tired. We shouldn't underestimate, right, how human beings are not the best versions of themselves when they are tired. And when we are putting pressure on ourselves to feel something different than what we're actually feeling, we have this idea, I should really be more sympathetic or empathetic or compassionate towards my friend, and yet I'm not. When we are putting pressure on ourselves to feel something that we're not, then often we feel disconnected from ourselves and disconnected from other people around us. So maybe even just having that idea, I should be different, kind of created the conditions for things to unfold a little bit in a different way. So maybe that's one thing that was happening. But maybe that's something a little bit more complex. Maybe there was some slight tension between you and your friend that was left unresolved the last time you met, and something small that at the time seemed insignificant, but now is affecting you. Maybe it's enough that it affects maybe your openness. Maybe you're feeling a little bit more guarded. Or maybe there was something in the way that your friend herself, the way that she was telling the story. Like maybe she was telling the story that she was exaggerating in a way that felt a little bit off, like she herself was disconnected from the story. Or maybe she felt like she was holding back, or she was hamming it up, being dismissive, whatever it was. There might be a way in which she was behaving. So it's not that we definitely would now like blame our friend. Oh, I couldn't feel connected because she was behaving in some particular way. Because, right, there's all these conditions of why she was behaving this way. The point here is that there are different types of conditions that come together for every moment, every one of our experiences, and they all have an impact on our experiences. So sometimes when we blame ourselves or we blame others, we're not taking into account these other conditions. So one way we might do this to reconsider, review, reanalyze an experience we had in which we feel like there's a lot of blame either for ourselves or for others, or that we feel constricted about, or any time in which there's a lot of dukkha. For example, and here are some tools that can be helpful. It can be feel cumbersome also. So I offer these just so that they might be helpful. I do this when I get stuck, when I feel like I'm blaming myself or blaming others about some difficulty. I sometimes use these different tools as a way to help. Kind of help like flesh out everything that happened. So for example, what are some of the present inner conditions that happened at the time? So what do I mean by that? What was the mind state that you had? What was the emotional state? What were beliefs or perceptions that were really active at that time? And the example that I gave, tiredness, would be an example. What are at the present outer conditions? For the story that I told, it was the way in which your friend was relaying the story, in which she was telling it. Maybe there was something that wasn't quite right or didn't feel quite right. So in the present moment, what was happening in the inside, your inner experience, and what was happening in the environment. But then, of course, what were some of the conditions in the past that related to this? Maybe there's habits of mind or some inner states that are affecting us. And in the story I told, that would be that maybe there was something unresolved between you and your friend. Maybe there was some slight tension. Maybe you felt just a little bit offended by something she said, or, you know, and the time passed. And so now you're showing up just a little bit differently. Or maybe there's these past outer conditions, these impressions or influences we have from our friends or from our history. So we can look at these different categories as a way to help us see, oh, there's so many different conditions that led to this consequence of not feeling connected with my friend in this story. So rather than having to blame, or rather than saying, okay, I'm at fault, or my friend is at fault, or something like this, instead we could just soften that whole idea of blame, soften the idea of that there's a self at the center of everything, and recognize that there are so many different things that come together and came together for that particular experience. And that has now gone away. Those conditions are no longer there. It doesn't mean that there still isn't some, maybe some harm or some feelings about it. But now there can be some moving forward. Often when we're stuck in a sense of blame, there's a real stuckness. We can't find our way forward. So This, and I'm not saying that we don't accept responsibilities for our actions either, and just say, oh, it's just conditions. There is no responsibility. This is so much about practice, as recognizing, yes, there's these conditions that come together, and we have responsibilities to accept the consequences of our actions. And this is a big part about what it means to be a mature practitioner too, right? Is to recognize that some of the consequences of our actions are uncomfortable. Dukkha. And then we practice with patience. We practice with forbearance. We practice with equanimity. We learn from these things so that we can, in the future, perhaps not have as much difficulty. But this idea of looking at actions and consequences, that they can, and rather than there being a self, which is often associated with blame, not always, but often, doesn't have to be at the center, doesn't have to be like the stuckness there. Instead, just to see, oh, all these things came together, I had a part, there was these other parts, and those, they've gone away now, and there's these further consequences, but to feel the freedom that is available there when we don't have to make ourselves or somebody else at the center and take in responsibility for everything. And so this part of practice is to recognize we take responsibility for our actions, and we recognize that lots of conditions come together, including clinging. And often the clinging is so a sense of self. So if we can soften the sense of self, if we can soften the clinging, there'll be less dukkha. And often this clinging is taking the form of blame. Not always, but often. So in that way, we might take this idea of that actions have consequences, a humdrum, everyday thing that we know, and just more thoroughly apply it to everything in our life, and to help us kind of find our way with more ease and less dukkha, less dissatisfaction, less suffering. So thank you.